sixth chapter, dealing with the sixth chapter. We'll get to that in just a moment, a few things that we want to look at. This is, of course, marks the beginning of our second year with you, and we're excited about that. We had a good first year, really an amazing first year in some ways, ups and downs, and hopefully we accomplished a few things. I think that we're on the right track with regard to being an evangelistic church. We want to continue this next year to emphasize that, of course, and even more so. We want that to become a real part of each one of our lives, that we're just constantly thinking about winning souls. And how can we do that? And how can I get a Bible study with somebody somewhere and just really emphasize that in our own personal lives, and then therefore collectively we'll have that kind of mindset. And remember to continue to carry your little cards with you, and you never know when you're presented with an opportunity that that you can invite someone to be here with us at Brown Street. But you have to have those cards with you. They're very handy. If you don't have a card, you can still, if something comes up, you can still, of course, recommend the Brown Street Church and invite them. But the cards are handy and kind of breaks the ice, makes it easy just to give to someone and invite them to be with us. But let's continue to do that, again, even more so than we have in the past. But I think we're off to a pretty good start. We did some good things in the community, covered more ground than I thought we would, tell you the truth, in the few months that we were out there. And so this year we'll be able to get out sooner and cover more territory. And we appreciate all of the individuals who have participated in that. I think that you will agree it feels wonderful when you go out there and talk to people. And even if you don't get a chance to talk to too many, a lot of people don't come to their doors. But at least you know you're doing the Lord's work. And we have had visitors come as a result of the work that we've done in the community. And so we need to keep that going. And I'm convinced that God will bless us just for our efforts. And we need to continue then to do that, not slow down in the second year or the third or the fourth or any time going forward. We just need to make that a part of us at Brown Street. And one of the things that I hope, and this is a part of our plan of growth, one of the things in this second year I hope that we can do even better is to have more get-togethers and increase even the love that we have one for another. I think that there's a lot of love at Brown Street, but we can obviously grow. Paul talked about abounding more and more in that area. And so just like the first year, we really want to emphasize, evangelism and keep that going. I hope that in the second year, we can even grow closer to each other and get to know. There's still some here that I don't know as well as I should, even after a year. And so we need to try to kind of target that, and let's do more of that. Just individually, even collectively, we can get together more, but we need to do that and emphasize that part. Remember, as we said in the very beginning, a congregation that is close and full of love, a close-knit congregation, is really essential to church growth. I've never heard of a local church that wasn't close and full of love that really grew the way, of course, you want. And so we need to make that our goal. And we can do better in some ways, so let's emphasize that. I'll preach some sermons along the lines of love and that sort of thing, and helping us to really target that in this next year. But we certainly appreciate the first year and continue to appreciate being here with you all on the work that we're trying to do. All right, let's get to the text, Romans chapter 6, and we're down to verse 19. And in this next section, remember, all of this really is dealing with righteousness. That is probably the key word throughout the book or the Sermon on the Mount, and what kind of righteousness we should have. Yes. Yeah. I said Romans. I wonder why Romans is on my mind. I'm sorry. Matthew chapter 6. Sermon on the Mount is what we're studying. And that covers Matthew chapter 5 through 7. We're basically in the middle of it, Matthew chapter 6. I'll get up tonight, and tonight when I preach on Romans, I'll keep saying Matthew. But Matthew chapter 6. And the key here in the Sermon on the Mount is righteousness. And what kind of righteousness should we have? We need, of course, he emphasized, to have a righteousness that supersedes the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. And so he emphasized that. It can't be just an outward kind of thing. It has to start inwardly. And that's very important to have. It can't be just a showy, ostentatious kind of righteousness. We don't do things just to be seen of men. And so he emphasized that. But righteousness and the kind that we have and the practicing of righteousness, all of that plays a major role in the Sermon on the Mount. And so we're still, even as we get to Matthew chapter 6, we're still dealing with righteousness. But now it's sort of the focus. If we're going to have the kind of righteousness that Jesus wants us to have, then our hearts need to be focused on the right thing. And so that's what he deals with, beginning at verse 19. We'll start reading there, maybe read through verse 21. It says, again, Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 through 21. Says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And all of these verses are important. The last verse there, really sort of, you almost need to look at that first before verses 19 and 20. It's very important that you have your heart in the right place, where your treasure is. That word treasure means a deposit. It's dealing basically with a place where you collect or you place all of your most cherished things. And wherever that treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. That's what you're going to be most focused on in life. And we all put our treasure somewhere. And of course, as we talk about spiritual things, it's either here on earth or it's in heaven. And if your most treasured, most loved things that you have, the things that are most valuable to you, if they're all earthly things, then what are you going to be thinking about most of the time? Earthly, material, physical things. And so Jesus is emphasizing we need really to make sure that our treasure is in the right place. That we don't want to be materialistic. One of the things that plague the church and society in general really is materialism, being too materialistic. And we've emphasized before that we of course are physical beings. We are in physical bodies. We have physical things that we have to be concerned with, but we don't want to get to the point where that's the primary aspect of our life, just the physical. At the end of the day, we're spiritual beings. We have souls, and we need to recognize that spiritual things are far more important and significant than the earthly things. So really the question is, what is it that is going to own your heart? What is it that's going to dominate your thinking? What do you think about the most? Does it have to do with spiritual things? Have to do with heaven? How often do you think about heaven? How often do you think about, again, just things that are spiritual in nature? How often do you think about the church? How often do you think about the Bible? How often do you think about prayer? How often do you think about just anything that would fall into that category of being spiritual, and then compare that with how often you think about your job? How often you think about your favorite team? Or how often you think about recreation and just things that are of an earthly nature? What do you think about the most? And what dominates your mind tells you where your treasure is. Because wherever your treasure is, that's where your heart is going to be. And that's what Jesus emphasizes. And so he basically approaches this from a negative standpoint and a positive standpoint. At verse 19, he says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where again moss and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. So here's what we should not do. Don't lay up your treasures for yourself here on earth. Now, does that mean that, and perhaps I don't have to emphasize this too much, you wouldn't think, but does that mean it's wrong to save money? Anybody have a bank account here? Probably all of us. There's nothing wrong with saving money. In fact, saving money, preparing for the future is a wise thing, and the Bible even encourages us along those lines. What did Paul say about the man who wouldn't take care of his family? He's worse than an infidel. And a lot of that is involved in taking care of family. Certainly this isn't nearly all of it, but a part of it at least is preparing for the future and that sort of thing. That's important. And when you're the head of a family, to take care of that sort of thing, you have to be a good steward over the treasures that God has blessed you with. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it is in some ways even commanded. I think there's a passage I've always liked over in Proverbs. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 6. And you might remember the illustration that is given by the wise man with regard to the ant. He says at Proverbs 6, at verse 6, "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard?" And so obviously, of course, there's some lazy people here in this world. And the wise man is saying, you ought to consider the ant. The ant is active. The ant prepares for the future. Have you ever, how many times have you seen an ant standing still? You don't see that very often. I suppose if you look at ants enough, you'll see an ant just standing. But hardly ever do you see an ant just frozen. Ants are always moving. They're always going somewhere. And usually it has to do with carrying food one place to another or going someplace to get some food and carrying it back. But they're constantly moving and preparing. And the wise man, by inspiration, says, consider the ant. And don't be a slugger. Don't be lazy. And so, you know, this whole idea, the whole principle of working and doing so to prepare future, and that there's nothing wrong with that at all, as long as that doesn't become the predominant thing in your life. We certainly need to save. And there's nothing wrong with that. Putting away for what we sometimes call a rainy day. That's just wise. And particularly if you're, again, in a position where you're taking care of a family, that's just wise. So when Jesus says, don't lay up your treasures on earth, that's not obviously what he is prohibiting. But I think the key word there, when you go back over to Matthew chapter 6, the key word at verse 19 is the simple word, yourselves. Because now that emphasizes a selfish kind of laying up. There's a world of difference between a man preparing for the future and saving for the future and the benefit of his family or anyone in the body of Christ, saving so because it's just a wise thing to do, to save and to have so you can give to others and help other people. That's a good thing. There's a world of difference between that and storing up and accumulating things just for yourself so that you can see how much stuff you can accumulate or even be filled with pride over all of the physical things that you have. And there's a difference between those two things. And so here Jesus says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures. And a lot of this has to do with attitude. And that's what it's all about, where your heart is, your attitude is. If you fall in love with the things of this world, that's going to be the thing that, again, dominates your mind. And inevitably, when that dominates your mind, then God is going to be left behind. If you're giving all kind of thought to just the accumulating of earthly things, you're not going to give a whole lot of thought to God and his kingdom and how you ought to be serving him and serving other people around you. It will become a very selfish kind of thing. Remember over in the book of Luke, turn over to Luke chapter 12. I'm sure you're you're familiar with this. Luke, the 12th chapter, one of the popular parables that Jesus sets forth. At verse 13, he says, "Someone in the crowd said to him, 'Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me.' But he said to him, 'Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?' And he said to them, 'Take care.'" Now listen to this. "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness." What is covetousness? Okay. Yes, desiring. It has to do desiring with that which someone else has, but the emphasis is it's to have an inordinate desire for something. And so it's not just your desire for physical things. I think I asked the question in a different class and could ask it again this morning. How many of you desire something physical? Well, every single one of you. I know for a fact that every single one of you has some desire for physical stuff. We all do, because again, we're physical beings. But it's an inordinate desire that really is condemned in Scripture. And that's what covetousness really is. And so he says that you have to beware of that. You have to guard against all covetous. Why? For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And I would to God that people in our society, and some even in the church, would understand that one's life does not simply consist of the things that you possess. And it's amazing how so many people, that simple saying, that so many people miss that what Jesus says your life does not consist of is the very thing that dominates the life of so many people, what you possess. That makes me who I am. That makes me important or not important. That makes me respect you or not respect you. It depends on what you have. And believe it or not, people, even if people won't articulate it just like that, because it kind of sounds bad when you say it out loud, but a lot of people go through life doing that very thing. Their level of respect for someone is directly related to how successful they are in life. And how successful they are determines in the mind of a lot of people and what kind of house you live in, what kind of car you drive. And then we buy into that. And you see, there are people I know who think that, everything is about what I have, to the point where I want a nice car so everybody can see me driving a nice car. And it really doesn't matter what my financial situation is, but people see me driving this nice car. So sometimes you have someone driving a $50,000 car and they can't hardly pay rent. Why? Because we bought into this, that our life really consists of our possession, of what we have. We make statements by what we have and what other people see that we have. And that shouldn't be what it's about at all. What you have physically doesn't determine your value. If you're rich, you're no more valuable than the one who is poor. If you're poor, you're no less valuable than anyone else who might be rich. It has nothing to do with that. And that's what Jesus is saying in this statement. But a lot of people, and he just pointed out to this preacher everything that he had. And after he sort of bragged about all of that's mine, and that over there is mine, and all of that as far as you can see, that's all mine. And he just paused and waited. He knew the preacher was going to praise him for, all of that. But the preacher put his hand on his shoulder and he pointed up towards heaven and said, "How much do you own in that direction?" And that's the point of the whole thing, isn't it? You can accumulate all this stuff and have a big house and own a bunch of property and acres of land. But when you go through life accumulating all of that, and that's your main focus, sometimes you don't even consider what you're laying up in heaven. And that's what we don't want. That's what Jesus is guarding us against. And there's a reason he's guarding us against that, because it's very easy for us to fall in love with the things of this world and to think, my life really consists of the things that I possess. That determines if I'm successful or not. But it simply doesn't. I think we read a passage. Turn over in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 5. I can't remember what the occasion was, but at some point we read this. Let's turn back over. Chapter 5, verse 10 is what I want to read just briefly, something that we should remember. Here's the problem with material things. The wise man says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. Don't we see that to be true in real life? You can see it with people. You maybe have experienced that in your own life. That there's ways in which I've experienced that in my life. That when it comes down to physical things, you accumulate stuff, and no matter what, you're not going to be satisfied by it. Now, he emphasizes here, when you love those things, when you love material things, they're not going to satisfy you. There's a sense in which material things can satisfy you if you have them in proper perspective. But when you love wealth, when you love mammon, love physical things, you can get more and more and more, and you'll never be satisfied. The more you get, the more you'll want. And so we just need to change our thinking about that. It's easy for any of us to fall in love, to really fall in love with something physical. And the fact of the matter is, when you look at the next thing over here, what Jesus says in our text, that's when he gets into talking about it from a positive standpoint. He says, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. We'll back up just a little bit here, the last part even of verse 19. Why shouldn't you lay up for yourselves treasures on earth? Because he says, where moth and rust can destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. And in other words, I mean, you may not experience any of that per se. No one may break into your house and steal your valuables. But the point of it is, the physical things that you accumulate are fleeing, aren't they? And you can have them one day and they can be gone the next. That wonderful house that you live in just like that can catch fire and be gone in just a very short period of time. You build your dream house, and just in an instant, it could be up in flames. I don't know if I've told this story before, not publicly, maybe some of you individually, but I always loved a DeVille Cadillac. Wanted a DeVille Cadillac. They're beautiful cars to me. And I always wanted one. So I'm always doing silly things sometimes. And I finally got a Seville Cadillac. I got one at an auction. And it was beautiful, but the engine didn't work. So I went and bought an engine and got it real cheap. Some brother in Christ, it gave me a name of a place that sold engines. And I got a real cheap one. I can't remember how much it was. It was very cheap, though. It had like 24,000 miles on it. You know, that's pretty good. So I got a beautiful DeVille Cadillac, but I had to get the engine, then put the engine in, and that took some time. I had to do some other repairs. But when it was all said and done, for a relatively small amount of money, I had a beautiful DeVille Cadillac with 24,000 miles on it. And it was beautiful. Even my wife would tell you. She didn't care about DeVille Cadillacs, but it was pretty. And I always wanted one. I think I wanted one too much. Because I was in a gospel meeting up in French Lick area. That's Larry Bird country there. And this is one of those places. There's a lot of them around here. A lot of hills, you know. And the meeting was at a time that it was kind of, a lot of deer was out. And the brethren kept telling me, be careful of the deer. I'm like, really? Well, are you just scaring me? Well, do you have some advice? How do I not hit a deer if it jumps in front of me? So I'm going back. I drove back and forth to this meeting. It was about an hour and a half away, but for whatever reason, I went back and forth this time. When on Wednesday night, guess what happened? Some of you know because I told you, I didn't hit a deer, I hit a horse. A horse came out, and just like, bam, just out of, jumped its fence, came out into the road, I hit a horse. So my Cadillac was gone. It dusted the guy. I mean, it was ruined. That horse flew about 30 feet in the air behind me. And, felt bad, but, I mean, I didn't do anything. Even the owner of the horse was he thought that someone was killed in the accident. But anyway, just like that, in a blink. That I drove that car for a week. It was after I had that car. That was my first trip, really, with my lovely Cadillac. And just like that, it was gone. Well, not exactly what Jesus is talking about, but it sort of is, isn't it? You fall in love with physical things, and anything could happen. You have it one day, the next day, it's gone. That's just the nature of anything that you have physically. It can rust, it can corrupt, it could be stolen. Somehow, some way, you can lose it. That's the problem with laying your treasures here on earth. It's just transient. It's all transient. And so he says, instead of doing that, you need to lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. And so that's, again, sort of the positive thing. That's what we ought to do. He's told us what we should not do. And so what do? You might find yourself, maybe there's someone here who you know you've just become altogether too materialistic. What do you have to do about that? You have to change your thinking. You have to have a change of mind. And the way you do that is by moving your treasure. You move it from heaven to earth. You start focusing on heavenly things. And think about the spiritual things that we're all so blessed with, and make those the things that are most important to you. And those are the things, again, that Jesus talks about. They can't be taken away from you. Any of the spiritual blessings, you can give them up yourself by becoming unfaithful, but nobody can steal from you. Things like prayer or, you know, whatever it is, the providential care of God. Those are things that you can treasure, and nobody can take them away from you. And really what it is, when we start talking about having a change of mind, the principle of life that we should operate with, all of us, and I don't know that we do it enough in this physical world, is to always remember that we're just pilgrims on this earth. That our real home is heaven, isn't it? That's our, you know, remember Paul talking about our citizenship being in heaven? That's really our real home. It's not here on earth. We're just pilgrims passing through. And that is a powerful principle, that when you start and look at our lives, we don't live that way very often. Go ahead, Dan.
I was just thinking, you're talking about these things. The older I get, the more I realize the things that I have or anybody else has, we're only stewards of it.
That's right.
We die and somebody else owns it.
Yes.
So we have it for a while and then it's gone.
Yes.
But they can't do that with our souls.
That's right.
You know, we die and we go to heaven or to hell, depending on how we live.
Yes.
But we're only stewards for a while. We say, well, this is mine. Well, it's only for a period of time.
That's right.
Yes.
And if we were to keep reading that passage in Ecclesiastes, that's the very point that the wise man makes. But he makes it from the standpoint of, you know, that person that is now going to have your stuff very often isn't going to treat it the way you would want it to be treated. But you have no control about that, do you? You die, and now your physical things belong to someone else. They'll do with it what they will. They might waste it. They might destroy it. Whatever. And that's just the nature of it. And so we need to understand, you know, these concepts, these ideas. And again, I mean, we're just passing through. We're not here for very long. You live the longest life, a very long, blessed life. If you live 100, you think you're blessed? And some, by chance, live a little bit longer than 100. But 100 years, that's a blink, isn't it? Compared to eternity. We're not here very long. We're just pilgrims. Yeah, go ahead, Ron.
I was thinking, as you're describing this, Christ is teaching the parable of the sower. He talks about the deceitfulness of riches.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
That's what you're describing.
Yes.
You know, we think we're going to get something out of it that we're really not. You know, the things we know that just aren't so.
Yes. Yes.
That's the deception.
It is. And deceitfulness, I mean, that is exactly what riches are. They're deceitful. They can't really bring you real joy. And, you know, people joke around, well, I like to see. But no, they're not. They won't satisfy you. They just won't. They will for a little while. But if you were to move into a mansion, you know what would happen? After just a little while, you get used to it. I don't care what it is. You buy you a brand new car. At first, boy, it has that new car smell. Everything's wonderful, wonderful. After a while, you just get used to it. That's why you always want more. Yes, Barbara, go ahead. Yes. That's right. That's exactly right. And we kind of forgot to finish that little parable over there, didn't we? But if you read the rest of that, I mean, here's this man, and all he can think about is what he's going to do. What am I going to do with all of this stuff now? Oh, I'm going to have to build bigger barns. And he never thought about sharing it with other people. He never thought about sharing it even with God. It was all about himself. That's the selfishness. That's the wrong way. Again, nothing wrong with saving. But, you know, if God blesses you wonderfully, and you end up doing very well from a financial standpoint, and there are many brethren, there are some here that do very well financially. That's a wonderful blessing. Give God the glory, but use the blessings that God gives you to help other people and to further the cause of Christ. And that's the right attitude, because again, you can't hold on. The things that you have are just temporary. Even if they last your whole life, you're going to die, and then what? We need to live like pilgrims. There was a story of a fellow who was traveling, and there was a very renowned religious man, and happened to be in Poland, and he went to Poland to visit this individual, and the fellow was gracious enough to allow this young man who was just kind of traveling to enter into his home and spend some time with him. And the young man, when he got into his house, he was kind of surprised. Here was a pretty, again, renowned individual. And he thought maybe he would, you know, have a significant dwelling, that sort of thing. But he lived in a small apartment. He had a cot, a table, that just hardly anything. And the young man asked him, said, where's all your furniture? And the older man asked him, said, where's yours? I said, that's a silly question. I'm just a tourist. I'm just traveling. I'm just passing through. The man said, so am I. And that's the very point, isn't it? But how many of us really live like that? How many of us really live in this world like we're just passing through? All of us probably accumulate altogether too much stuff, because we're all guilty sometimes of thinking this is a more long-term situation than it really is. We're all pilgrims. And if we could just get that principle in our minds and live by it, we could do a lot more good for the kingdom, for our own souls. We'd be spiritually stronger. And again, I'm not saying, you know, we balance all of this. We are physical beings. I'm not saying it's wrong to like physical stuff. We all do. But how much? Where are you laying your treasures? Is it heaven? Your most valuable, that the things that are most important to you, are they spiritual or physical? That's the point of the whole lesson. Yes.
Years ago, I don't remember who the preacher was, but he was preaching along this line. Mm-hmm. And what he said always stuck with me. He said, you can't, and it's a Bible principle, of course, you can't take it with you when you go,
yes,
when you die. And if you could, chances are it'd burn up the first night.
Yeah.
That's
right. That's exactly right. And because you're not, if you're materialistic, you're not going to be serving God the way you should. Let's turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 6. You're familiar with this. We have just a minute or two, and we'll close with this particular passage. Boy, we can go way back. We go all the way back to verse 8. It says, but if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But now watch verse 9. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation in a snare. I've often said in preaching that that no Christian should desire to be rich. If you desire to be rich, then your mindset is wrong as a Christian. There's not one of us here. I'm not saying there's anything sinful with being rich. And as I described earlier, sometimes you work hard with your hands and God blesses you and you end up being rich. Nothing wrong with that. But that should not be your desire. Not one of us here this morning. Our desire should not be to be, I want to be wealthy someday. That shouldn't be your desire. And this is what Paul is dealing with. Verse 9, again, those who do that, those who desire to be rich, fall into temptation and a snare. It doesn't even mean when you get rich, you're going to fall into temptation. Those who just desire to be rich, you can be poor and still desiring to be rich and fall into temptation and into a snare and into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Why? For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And that is the basis even of the teaching of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. Don't lay up your treasures here on earth. But that's what too many of us do because we have a love of money. And that's the root of all kinds of evil. We could read more of this, but down at verse 13, about verse 17, says, "And for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches." We've kind of talked about that principle here this morning. "But on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, and to be generous, and ready to share." So here he's describing those who are rich. And if you are rich, again, you've been blessed by God. Give him the glory, but do the right thing with the riches that you have. Now, before we close, we've again looked at this passage before, and I asked the question, how many of us are rich? Really, we all are. We may not be millionaires, but we all have, if you have more than just the bare necessities of life, you're really in that rich category. And almost all of us have that. So what are you doing with your riches? A lot of it depends on where your heart is, where you have laid your treasure. So let's learn that principle with regard to righteousness. We can't be materialistic and be righteous in the eyes of God and practice righteousness. Appreciate your attention.